Weekends with Jason Olborn on today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome back. It wasn't long ago that on this show I had former prison officer Tess Corth explaining the scandal that erupted at Dublin FCI, Federal Correction Institution in California, where a sex scandal broke out and Tess was involved as a whistleblower to explain this abuse that was happening within the prison. Well, we've just learned in the last few days that there was a sudden announcement of the closure of Dublin FCI. And some of the stories that came through that have been reported in the past week, a special master was recently assigned to oversee the troubled prison and will review the casework and ensure inmates are transferred to the correct location. That was what US District Court Judge Yvonne Gonzalez-Rogers wrote in her order. She said this includes whether an inmate should be released to another facility, home confinement, halfway house, or granted a compassionate release. It's an incredible story, and Tess Corth is on the line. She's going to join me in just a moment just to tell you a bit more about her. She worked at FCI Dublin for 25 years. She started as a correctional officer in 1997, and her assignments over that quarter century, if you can believe that, included unit security secretary, case manager, reentry affairs coordinator, and unit manager. But despite all the hard work she did, however, and the recognition that she received, well, all of that doesn't matter because retaliation went straight after her. She became a whistleblower. And would you believe it, she's here to tell us the final chapter of this sordid story. Tess Corth, welcome back to Weekends.
It's not a final story. It will continue on and on and on. But yeah, there's been a lot of changes and a lot of stuff happening since the last time I was on.
So we were talking only a matter of perhaps weeks ago about the various scandals, the introduction of veterans that seem to be working as guards, creating more sex abuse scandals. There was the pastor that was charged, etc. There was convictions of others. It was just an incredibly bad situation. And many people wouldn't be aware, but typically a women's prison is a low security environment, so it's not what you would see perhaps in the movies as a maximum security. Most of it is just minimal security. And so you would think that this would be a reasonable way to rehabilitate troubled women. And yet all of this happens to be blow up into this incredible scandal, so much so that very quickly it all turns and now the prison is closed. So can you tell us what was the beginning, and were you surprised or was this just inevitable? It seems that most of the rest of the world is surprised by what happened.
Well, I thought it was inevitable. I mean, I was not surprised. We've been having court hearings since last time I was on to try to get a special master put in charge or oversee Dublin so they can make sure things were running smoothly, they were doing things legally, following the court order, because they weren't following the judge's court orders at all. They just were disregarding it. At the court hearings, the Bureau of Prisons, Dublin staff that were coming in, they were providing basically like boilerplate answers. And so the attorneys for the inmates would contact me and, you know, ask me to interpret what they were providing for the other attorneys, for the lawyers. And so I knew exactly what they were doing. I said, oh, look, that's their standard answer for everything. And so not too long after that, the judge, I think she just kind of was fed up with all their BS. She sent the FBI in. So the institution was raided again by FBI. They went in, took all computers, all the documents out of the executive staff offices to get information that she needed. And all the executive staff were walked out. So again, you know, the captain, the two AWs, associate wardens, the warden, I think, and the camp administrator. So they were not fired from the Bureau prison, but they were fired from Dublin. So they on the spot, that was their last day. So there was a lot of turmoil going on with that. And they put some, you know, temporary people over Dublin. And when they did that, I kind of knew there was something going on. But that was the day that the judge said, you know what, you guys, we are going to do a master, a special master over you, because you're, you know, you guys are doing stuff that is not what was court ordered. And I just can't trust what you're doing. So when that happened, that's the first time in history that something like that's happened. And, you know, personally knowing all of the Bureau people and, you know, a lot of the executives, I knew they weren't going to go for that. You know, they don't want people sticking their nose in their business from outside the Bureau. So that was a few weeks before the special master actually set her office up inside FCI Dublin. And I don't think that they expected that. They thought that she would drop in, do some things, you know, check on them periodically, but she actually set everything up inside. And that was a week before they announced that they were closing Dublin. So once that office was set up inside Dublin, I knew they were going to close it. Now, I didn't know they were going to close it, announce on a Monday that they were closing Dublin on Friday. That was a little shocking. They haven't even told staff what's going to happen with them. So they don't know if they're reopening it as a male prison, which they do sometimes. But, you know, the staff are in limbo. The inmates are clueless. They don't know where they're going. Right now, they are in a jail. Most of them are in jail, just waiting to go where they're supposed to go. It's a lot's happened. A lot has happened. The judge was trying to do a court order to keep people from transferring. So they transferred everyone out really early in the morning to beat the court order. So, yeah, a lot's happened.
Now, what's the process at this point with the ladies to be moved to other prisons or to be released? Is it a case that it's just some good luck, for example, for prisoners that they can be released early? Does it work like that? Or is it a case that prisoners have simply just found another home? You would think that to relocate some 600 prisoners can't be an easy task.
There's only 5 female prisons throughout the country. So they are just going to be spread out between those, well, now 4 without Dublin. So they'll be spread out. There's a lot of things they got to look at, because if they are separated, if they have separatees, like people they can't be around, they got to look at that. Some have multiple separatees, and those separatees have to be separated. So I don't know how they're going to do that. They only have 4 female prisons. So it's going to be a mess. So I don't know. I just saw something come through the attorney that I usually am working with is going to try to get a bunch of compassionate releases rushed through, because a lot of the inmates qualify for compassionate release. It's just that the BOP would deny them automatically. And then it was a long process. Then the inmates have to go through attorneys and do it directly to the court. So hopefully that the courts will just do it, you know, directly, because they've been through a lot.
Well, this is it. Where would the other 4 prisons be located? I mean, obviously they can't be in California, can they?
Mm-mm. No, they have. There is a camp in Victorville, but actual FCI is actually the same security level. There's one in Texas, Florida, Illinois, And where's the fourth one? I can't remember, but nowhere around here. I can't think right now where the fourth one is, but, you know, far away from California. So it affects their visiting, the family ties, all that kind of stuff.
Now, how does that affect, therefore, these women if all of a sudden you can't have a visitor because you've been moved to another part of the country? This must sort of play into the hands of releasing more prisoners than otherwise would be the case, because you'd have to think if it's about rehabilitation, this is a major setback through no fault of the women at all.
Yeah. With the female prisoners, it affects them a lot more than the males, because if they were getting visits at Dublin, it's their children, grandchildren, that kind of thing. So it's going to affect them. It's going to affect them a lot, not to be able to see their children.
Now, what happens, therefore, in terms of this? What do we know if they've still got to keep this prison open for some prisoners? Is it expected that it could run indefinitely? Is it a case of winding up very quickly? How long would you expect it before the doors are finally closed, before it is perhaps repurposed or just closed down altogether?
If they do they do it really quick. So if they were going to do a mission change, which that's what it's called, I would think maybe June or July they would have that done. But one of the reasons they're saying that they had to transfer everyone out was because there's mold and asbestos in there. So it may be too expensive to have that taken out and all that kind of thing, because that was one of the court orders, was they needed to bring somebody from the outside to remove all that stuff, which for years they said they never had. So they may just say, forget it, let's sell it, because it's prime real estate land. It's like they could get so much money for that land.
Well, this is it, isn't it? Isn't it amazing, though, that when it comes down to it, it always comes down to money, one way or another. And despite the fact that the state says that in the best interests of these women who have obviously made, you know, a bad decision or something's happened in their life, that the rehabilitation process seems to be put onto the back burner. Tess, from your experience, and you've served for you know, decades now, is this a scandal that's unprecedented in the prison system, or is it just a case that it's been able to come to the surface and at long last been exposed that the system is literally broken?
It happens at all the female prisons. It's just nobody wants to get involved. You know, they just go to work and they want to go home. That's it. I didn't see anything. They didn't do it in front of me, that kind of stuff, which of course they're not going to do it in front of you, but you still are supposed to report the stuff that you're hearing. So
it's heartbreaking, isn't it? Because you just think, and as you said, with the women's prison and visitors, et cetera, that there are mums with young children and trying to get their lives back on track. And the idea that the prison itself is low security and a camp in some areas. For many, to have a roof over their head and some form of consistency is actually a good thing. But for the system to betray these ladies in so many different ways. And at the same time, you as the whistleblower bringing it forward, exposing what's really going on, no one can blame the whistleblower. You are simply the messenger reporting on this. Do you think, therefore, that there's a chance that that those perhaps in the higher echelons are going to look back at this and say, we need to rethink the way that we do women's prisons in this country from now on?
No, they're not smart. They are not educated. They're not smart. They just move up because they got in trouble. I mean, it sounds weird, but the ones that are making decisions and stuff, they usually are the ones that got in trouble, and they don't want them in prisons anymore. So they go to the regional offices, and they get promoted, and they end up in central office making decisions. And, you know, they don't care. They're not smart. They don't think logically.
It's such a sad, sad state, isn't it, to think that despite the warnings, despite everything else, you expect more of the same. And you certainly put your career on the line for the benefit of other women who you were in charge of, looking after, if you will, and putting them on the path to building a brand new life. And yet this incredible story of FCI Dublin being shut down shocks many people, but at long last, at least it's a step in the right direction, even if there is a lot of restructuring to get these women's lives in order. I want to thank you for your time today, Tess. It's a big, big story.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, now, well, thank you.
Yeah, and all the best. And we will watch to see as we go forward to see when this prison does actually close completely and how the lives go on from there. And Tess will no doubt keep us informed. Now, if you love a good documentary, then you'll love our special Screenings Uninterrupted. Cinema features some of the latest or notable documentaries from the world's best filmmakers. Check out TNT's website for more information. Weekends are better when you spend it with us on today's News Talk, TNT.
Los Angeles has been described as a suburb looking for a city. Join me as we explore LA's neighbourhoods and the local restaurants, cafes and bars that are an integral part of these vibrant and diverse communities.
Today we are going to cook a small steak for people who are really quite hungry.
Very, very simple. A couple squeezes of lemon in there.
Since you're adding the meat, and you can do it with tofu options as well for the vegetarians.
Olive oil. So now we're going to season it up. Fresh grind black pepper.
Really hot and busy in here.
I'm gonna go ahead and make some butter toast.
Olive oil.
Ah, smells, really smells good.
Grab our shiitake mushrooms.
Season with salt a little bit.
Boy, it's getting hot in the kitchen. Need another drink of my beer. Ah, that's the best part of cooking.
And we are ready to put our plate together.
Add the mussels right around the rim. See, we have really nice colors, nice piece of fish.
We just need to add a little bit of powder sugar.
And I will just put a little bit of reduction glaze over the top.
When you add a pesto like this onto a braised meat, the smells that just come up are just wonderful. Take it from me, we've got a good thing going here.
Not see it coming. It's prediabetes, and it captures 1 in 3 adults. You may not even know you have it, but you can escape. Take the 1-minute prediabetes risk test to know where you stand. With early diagnosis, you can change the outcome and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. Be your own hero on smartphones everywhere at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Hi, I'm Susan Lucci. I never thought about heart disease until I had my own heart event. At first, like so many other women out there, I ignored my symptoms. A slight pressure on my chest, shortness of breath. I thought, I don't have time to be sick. I had a 90% blockage in my main artery and a 75% blockage in the adjacent artery. I received 2 stents in my arteries. Stents developed through research funded by the American Heart Association. Those stents saved my life. I'm so grateful to the American Heart Association. Their research helped save my life. I can enjoy life with my children, my grandchildren, and my friends. Please, listen to your heart. The only reason I'm here today is because I did. Learn more about the American Heart Association's life-saving work at helpheart.org.
Our beautiful world is changing, withering, dying by the hands of those who don't value nature, even though we all depend on it for life itself. But there is hope. Together with caring friends, the Nature Conservancy can restore our lands, heal our waters, and save our wildlife with big solutions only nature can provide. But every day we lose more of the places we love, and we urgently need to save endangered lands, waters, and wild species. The actions we take today will determine the tomorrow we leave to our children and grandchildren. The water they drink, the air they breathe, the beauty they experience. To learn more about how you can help protect and conserve our beautiful world, visit nature.org today.
TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission. So many people who had no history of heart illnesses have got it now, or blood clotting after the COVID-19 vaccination. Punish those who hurt people with COVID madness, lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
Welcome back. And it was a shocking story, wasn't it? The Dublin FCI just closing a prison just like that. Incredible. And Tess giving us a bit of an update. Well, we saw recently on the 10th of April that an announcement came that O.J. Simpson, 76 years of age, had died. Now, the interesting part of the O.J. Simpson story, of course, is that for many of us, we grew up realizing that you can actually get away with murder. Now, of course, he was found not guilty in a court of law, but people just couldn't believe it was possible. Then, of course, there were the famous gloves that were found at the scene of the crime that OJ was asked to put on in court, and clearly they didn't fit. They were too small. That led his defense attorney to simply say, if the gloves don't fit, you have to acquit. And acquit they did. And the rest of the world was simply sitting there saying, what just happened? Fast forward, and there was a civil case for the wrongful death of OJ Simpson's ex-wife, Nicole Brown, and her friend, Ron Goldman. This was an award of millions of dollars that OJ never paid. You fast forward a few years, and OJ Simpson's serving time, 9 years behind bars for the theft of some memorabilia that he claimed that he owned. It's an incredible story of one of America's darlings, superstars, possibly the ultimate riches-to-rags story that you just couldn't quite believe. And in many ways, people are relieved today that Simpson is no longer with us, and his death even was a strange story. He seemingly had recovered from prostate cancer and was on the up and up, but something else happened, and then he was gone. Well, it is a mad, mad world in many ways as we try and understand it. So I think it's appropriate, and I don't mean any disrespect when I say it that way, but I think we need to talk to a psychiatrist, and a wonderful one at that. Her name is Dr. Carol Lieberman, internationally renowned as the Terror Therapist. She's a board-certified Beverly Hills psychiatrist, three-time Emmy-honored television personality, radio show talk host, best-selling author and professional speaker, and since 9/11, recognizing that what the world needs most is help coping with the ultimate monster under the bed, terrorism. And Dr. Carol has devoted herself to encouraging people to break through their denial and giving them the psychological tools they need to survive. Dr. Carol, this is a little bit different, but it's the same way. People just could not understand this case of O.J. Simpson seemingly getting away with murder. Welcome to Weekends.
Thank you so much.
Do you find the O.J. Simpson story as perplexing as everyone else seems to?
Oh, it was really very disappointing. You know, that was at a time in the 90s when, well, first of all, I was analyzing the trial pretty much every night on television. And I had just begun working myself as an expert witness, a psychiatric expert witness. And so it was very disappointing to think that this is what the justice system is all about. How could they let this man get away with murder? And, you know, I think it had that impact on a lot of people at that time, you know, people, particularly people who work in the justice system, like, what are we doing? You know, why is this happening? And of course, then when the civil trial, when he was found responsible, at least that, you know, that had, that brought some comfort, but it wasn't the same thing. And it really was, you know, of course he had his dream team in the criminal trial. But it was really very disillusioning and disheartening.
Well, this was it, wasn't it? Because many of us can recall it's like these major events in history, the car crash with Princess Diana, 9/11, and the O.J. Simpson trial. There wasn't anyone around the world not watching what was going on a daily basis. We all saw the very slow car chase in the white Ford Bronco. We remember it as if it was last week. And then that court case. And there's this strange thing, isn't there, when celebrities are charged with horrific crimes, part of us doesn't want to believe it. And of course, if they are sentenced, it becomes a real abrupt shock that somebody who can be living the life of Riley can somehow be put behind bars. But in this case, never happened. And then when you fast forward to the civil case and millions of dollars awarded against him and no intent to pay, you wonder, how do the victims in this case, the families of Nicole Brown and Ron Golden, how do they even expect to get on with their lives? It's like one betrayal followed by a little bit of, you know, some sort of satisfaction, not really justice. And then the ultimate betrayal by not even being able to pay the bill, if you will, for something like that. This damage, is it irreparable, or can people get beyond it, in your experience?
Well, I happen to know that the Goldmans have been suffering terribly since Ron Goldman was killed, since O.J. killed Ron Goldman, not just because of the loss, of course, of Ron, but also because of the lack of punishment of O.J. in the criminal trial and even in the civil trial, although they were awarded money and then they never really got it. You know, it's been one pain, one torture after another. And so it's been a lot of years that they have been tortured by OJ, and he seemed to have gotten a kick out of it, you know, a high out of it. It was he was enjoying that he was twisting the knife in them.
Isn't that a shocking scenario? Therefore, if that's the case, what were we really dealing with, would you say, from your expert opinion, inside the mind of Simpson?
Well, you know, he was a narcissist. He was a sociopath. I actually, I called him a Prince of Darkness in one of my books. My first book actually was Bad Boys, Why We Love Them, How to Live with Them, and When to Leave Them. And I talk about 12 different types of bad boys. And I used OJ as the prototype for the Prince of Darkness. And what is the Prince of Darkness? It's a bad boy who is abusive to a woman. This type of bad boy, you know, the abusive type of bad boy, acts out towards women, is violent towards women when they feel that they're going to be abandoned by the woman. And so what's so interesting with OJ is that, and you have to look into their childhood, of course, for when they had their first abandonment or the most important abandonment. And with OJ, he had a sibling born very soon after he was born. And so he was replaced at the breast by this sibling. So that was an abandonment by his mother. Also, his parents got divorced when he was young, and his mother had to work long hours. So that was an abandonment as well. So with Nicole, the night, you know, there wasn't a coincidence or by happenstance that he murdered her the night that he did. It was when they were both at a ballet recital for their daughter, and he saw Nicole for the first time. He realized she's not coming back this time. You know, they had broken up several times and she always kept coming back. But that night, he could tell by the way she was towards him that this was the end. There was no coming back. And that is what brought out the rage.
It's remarkable, isn't it, to think that despite the world that that O.J. Simpson lived in, you know, a football star, a movie star, larger-than-life character, but then this particular occasion, his world shrinks to the point that this woman that's certainly had enough, but that's not enough for O.J. Simpson. It's something that we see, and this is probably why I would consider domestic violence since that time, took a very different direction. Certainly here in Australia, we live in a country that is very much aware of domestic violence at these levels. We've only just seen this week, Carol, that that Michael Slater, a former test cricketer in this country, a former sports commentator, had the world at his feet, is also behind bars in custody at the moment after some 18 domestic violence charges put against him. Very, very shocking. And of course, what it does is that you either go completely numb against it or you shake your head once again thinking, hang on a second, this man was a superstar in the Australian sporting arena. And do we kind of maybe on some level try and justify it because of who someone is, or do we just get beyond it? Does celebrity, in other words, provide a layer of insulation or a Teflon coating?
Well, you know, of course, the most interesting recent case of domestic violence was Johnny Depp and Amber Heard.
Of course.
And, you know, and celebrity played a part in for both of them. But, you know, and yes, I think people who watched the trial were much more sympathetic towards Johnny Depp. But yes, I think if you like a particular celebrity, whether it's the man or the woman, certainly, I mean, most people would feel sympathetic towards the woman unless they realize that she's been lying, like Amber Heard. But you don't want, if you really like a particular celebrity, you don't want to think that they could do anything wrong. You don't want to ruin their image of them that you have, that you're holding on to.
Well, this is it, isn't it? This is the most remarkable scenario, is that how we can convince ourselves to justify certain things that are going on. This is a very awkward and uncomfortable situation for all of us when we think about this, because we have to convince ourselves. We play tricks with ourselves, but at some point we accept it. Perhaps another example would be the case of Mike Tyson. This was another situation, of course, that this man ends up serving a substantial amount of time. And, of course, this was for another case of sexual assault. Can you compare Mike Tyson with O.J. Simpson in these cases at all?
Well, with Mike Tyson, from what I remember, it wasn't really anyone, the woman wasn't someone he was in a long-term relationship with. Wasn't that just sort of a one-night stand that when he kind of just had a tantrum, basically? I mean, you know, of course, any kind of violence is still bad. But, you know, one of the things, I mean, now in some ways it's easier for women to get temporary restraining orders. In fact, it seems in some cases that I've been involved in as an expert witness, it sometimes seems like it has gone the other way in some cases. In other words, where the men are being unfairly penalized, you know, the women are lying, and you know, so it has shifted to some degree, and it's easy. On the other hand, it's easier for women to get these temporary restraining orders, which then they try to make permanent. But the thing is that even if you have a temporary or permanent restraining order, you know, if a man wants to, you know, is outraged that you rejected him and abandoned him, he can find ways to reach you where, you know, there isn't enough time for you to call 911, to call the police.
This, it's incredible, isn't it, when you think just how simple it is, and this is a big deal with the restraining order. Now, we here in Australia just last Saturday had six people murdered at Bondi Westfield from a lone man with a knife, a 40-year-old man who seemingly had some issues from the point of view of loneliness and wanting to attract friendship and women, even to the point that he registered as a male escort, hoping that he could have interaction with females. Now, none of this has come out in a courtroom or been announced officially by the police, but this is from lots of reporting that's been going since. So this is a very, very disturbing case. And when we saw of the six victims, five were women, women of more or less his age group, a little bit younger, a little bit older, a devastating tragedy. This would have to be about the worst thing you would see on Australian soil, considering that we don't have guns the way that you might have in the United States. So it doesn't stop at borders. This is a personality, a situation, etc. But what was really devastating to lots of Australian males specifically was that our Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, came out and said that because of this attack and because of another attack that happened on Monday, where Bishop Mari Emanuel was stabbed by a 16-year-old boy whilst delivering a sermon on video in his church, he said that all men have to take note of what's going on here. Now, on X or Twitter, I saw a post from a lady get a lot of traction and said, hang on a second, the men were the ones that were trying to stop this killer at the shopping centre. How have you forgotten that? My question is, how can somebody at a level of a prime minister completely misread the situation and want to blame all men for something? Is that offensive? Because I found it incredibly offensive, or am I too sensitive?
No, it's very uninformed. You know, what was interesting, I'm very familiar with both of those incidents. And when the first one happened at the mall, I wrote on Twitter, you know, the first thing they're telling us is that it's not terrorism. I mean, I'm very, of course, as the terrorist therapist, I'm very aware of looking at things and trying to determine whether they're terrorism, and noting for years how the first thing that the authorities do is to say whatever it is not terrorism. So, okay, that turned out to not be terrorism, but then a few days later, it was a terrorist attack on this priest. So, but yes, you know, it is sad that this man did have such, the man in the mall incident, did have such mental health problems. You know, it was interesting when they interviewed, I read a story about interviewing the parents, and the mother said, you know, yes, he's had mental problems since he was a teenager. Well, you know, I know he was around 40, but why, if he had mental problems since he was a teenager, didn't you do a better job of making sure that he got help for all these years in between?
Well, this is it, isn't it? And of course, well, the defense may well be that he's an adult, et cetera. But when you're dealing with something that was reported as schizophrenia, we're not dealing with something that can just be put to the side. There's the cases of medication, et cetera. And ongoing treatment. And of course, many schizophrenics will complain that the medicine they take knocks them out and makes them incredibly tired, and they don't really live life. So I guess that there's a motivation there to want to, as he did, was to move away from his home in the northern state of Queensland, move down to Sydney in New South Wales and try and start a new life. But it's a shocking scenario that we look at and just wonder, how can it be prevented? And the system always wants to blanket the whole crisis and create new rules for everyone, such as, you know, bulletproof vests for security guards or facial recognition, like that's going to do anything. And so the innocent people, the 99.9% of the rest of us looking on at these tragedies, wondering how it is that we must pay yet again in one way by sacrificing freedoms in this situation. And there's this delicate balance that is set up as a narrative between freedom and safety. And one wonders, therefore, how it is that we can try and live a balanced life so that the rest of us don't go down a pathway that all of our lives are destroyed. And I'm wondering, just quickly before we have to take a break, your comments there, how much can we trade off our freedoms before all of society pays a much heavier price?
Well, you know, that is something that that we do have to really weigh. You know, on the one hand, it's very unfortunate that we have to give up some freedoms in order to feel safer. But I think in some cases it's beginning to go, and in some cases it has already gone too far in terms of, you know, things being where safety is used as an excuse for doing things to really control people.
And this is the point, isn't it? When it becomes a tool of convenience for governments to gain more power at the expense of the people they're meant to serve, that's when many people smell a rat and realize that they may be taken for a ride or taken advantage of. Now, we will take that break. And when we come back, I'm going to talk to Dr. Carol Lieberman about my favorite subject, the cognitive impairment of Joe Biden. We're also going to talk about Donald Trump, maybe even asking about E. Jean Carroll in that particular case. I feel like that we're watching a manipulation on top of a manipulation, but we have the expert here. Don't go anywhere. You're watching and listening to Weekends here on TNT.
My name's Stacy. I'm 57, and I was adopted in 2020.
We were adopted in 2019.
And we were adopted in 2021.
We had a house, and it sounds crazy, but it wasn't a home. The one thing that Jake and Emma brought is it became a home.
When I met Dakota, he had just turned 14.
You weren't there for the first this and the first that. I missed the first words, but we got a lot of other firsts.
Watching her say, oh my God, I cannot believe I got my license. And she's like, I passed. And I'm like, girl.
See them grow. It is.
They chose to love us. They didn't have to. They chose us. Family.
You. And you.
Kids in the middle.
What I thought was a complete life was nowhere near complete, but it is now.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org.
Our beautiful world is changing, withering, dying by the hands of those who don't value nature, even though we all depend on it for life itself. But there is hope. Together with caring friends, the Nature Conservancy can restore our lands and save our wildlife with big solutions only nature can provide. To learn more, visit nature.org today.
When you need to know what's going on around the world, stay with Weekends with Jason Olborn on today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome back to Weekends. My guest this hour, Dr. Carol Lieberman, and there is much that we need to talk about. Perhaps we should call this segment On the Couch. Dr. Carol, thinking about Joe Biden's cognitive impairment, it seems to go from bad to worse, but at the same time, the Democrats are all intent to put this man forward. I look at his presidency and the slump in the United States and the many, many faults and flaws and inflation problems, border crisis, fentanyl problems, too many immigrants with nowhere to put them, and wonder how it is that you can cover all of this up and allow Joe Biden to continue. Maybe this is the great cover story. In other words, when it all turns bad, all the administration has to do is say, oh, we've just realized that our president does seem to be cognitively impaired, and therefore he's not to blame, much like what we saw with the classified documents case. How can this man be allowed to hold office when we see him? It's almost like he can do whatever he likes, but when we don't like something, we've got the perfect excuse. Yeah, he's a little bit slow and impaired.
Well, you know, first of all, I have been warning people since he ran for president in 2020 from his basement. I have been telling people, I started telling people then that he had encroaching dementia, is how I phrased it, encroaching dementia. And it has been encroaching ever since. I mean, it's just gotten worse and worse. And, you know, even back then, when he supposedly won, it wasn't really the people. I mean, I know they claim that he had so many millions of votes, but really people who voted for him weren't really voting for him for the most part. They were people who didn't like Donald Trump, and they would have voted for a cockroach if that's who was running against him. So there's that. And people, I mean, you know, the American public, if God forbid, he gets elected again, you know, if he manages to make it to election day, it will be the American people who are at fault, you know, that they deserve what happens. Although, of course, we can't have another four more years of Joe Biden. I mean, the country has gone to hell in a handbasket ever since he's been president. The thing is, it's not really Joe Biden who's president. It's Obama who is having another presidency through Biden, you know, is pulling the strings of Biden. And Obama was the worst president ever, in my opinion. And so we're having more of that. I mean, he is really trying to destroy the country, Obama. And so, you know, the more demented Biden is, the easier it is for Obama to control the country. And that is what is happening. That is why there is, you know, the Democratic Party is behind him. I mean, of course, you don't need to be a psychiatrist to see that nowadays. You know, maybe when I first started talking about it, when he was first running from his basement, that's one thing. But nowadays, you don't have to be a psychiatrist to see that he has dementia. And I mean, this is so crazy. You know, if this was a movie, for example, I mean, people wouldn't believe it. You know, they wouldn't vote a man like that in to be president. You can see he has dementia. So Americans are to blame for this, the ones who voted for him or who, you know, decided that they didn't like Trump and so they'll vote for the other person. And hopefully that won't happen again. But yes, you know, they are trying everything, every which way to get rid of Trump.
Well, there's no question, is there? We've seen the countless lawfare cases, most of which have gone nowhere, the current Stormy Daniels criminal trial. And then we saw a curious case. I'm not sure if you've caught up with it, that this fellow Max Azzarello, who set himself alight in front of the courthouse yesterday. Now, some interesting early reporting suggested that the man was claimed to be an independent researcher, but a conspiracy theorist. And then some other journalists took a deep dive and discovered that this man was a pro-Obama Democrat. And suddenly that sort of narrative dissipated in this particular case. But Azzarello's manifesto, if you will, it was a Substack article, was basically talking about how the world was taken over by a totalitarian con in a great Ponzi scheme. And in many ways, he's not far wrong from what's really going on here. But it's interesting, isn't it, how in the media, certain narratives are always put forward even before the facts are known. Now, if you're a social media nobody, you're a conspiracy theorist, but when the media does it, it seems that all bets are off.
Right. They're not conspiracy theorists. They're just telling you the truth. Yes. That's a very sad story. You know, he actually started out as he went to college and he got a master's. And it had to do with city planning, things like that. And so friends who knew him back then, you know, have been saying that he was very different when they knew him and when he was going to school. And you know, clearly he has some kind of mental illness, most likely bipolar disorder, that didn't get enough help, enough treatment. But yes, he was talking about this Ponzi scheme. But, you know, the thing was, he was saying it was a Biden-Trump Ponzi scheme, that they were in it together, which of course doesn't make sense. I mean, you know, but if you do look at it, like, you know, what is happening in Washington and the deep state, the Biden Obama people, you know, it does make sense. I mean, what it has to do with what I tweeted about this, I find things that I feel the most angry about and I do mad tweeting. And so I tweeted about how, you know, that it was a shame he didn't get help or he should have gotten help, but, that there were some, you know, maybe we should take some of what he's saying, look again at some of what he said. I related it to that this is the latest case of someone being going over the edge because of how America is changing and not away from traditional values. That this is, I mean, that's really what's happening here. There are a lot of people, some that we hear about in the news, some that are just happening, you know, very quietly in their little homes, you know, they're with their, just their family and friends know. People are going mad because of how all this wokeism, you know, how society is changing, how everything is going upside down, how men are women, and all of this. All of this crazy stuff is really making people crazy, especially if someone has an underlying mental illness. It really even more easily tips them over.
Now, California is not immune here. If anything, it's just off the charts. I mean, we recently saw pictures in San Francisco of the homeless crisis, the drug use outside Nancy Pelosi building. There was a woman reported to be giving birth on the street whilst being injected with a drug. I mean, this is just next level disaster. I mean, how bad can it get before something really blows up in the streets of the United States where enough is enough? Are we headed to the ultimate, which is some form of civil war?
Well, I think we are, because it's not just, I mean, yes, San Francisco is one of the worst places, but that kind of thing is happening more often. You know, with the homeless, but not just that now. Now we have all these migrants coming across the border. There was a story, where was that? I forget which state it was in, but there was a story today about how there was supposed to be a high school football game on a field and the migrants wouldn't move from the field. I mean, that is just adding to, you know, there was all this homelessness crisis and all of that. Now you add the migrants and it is just bananas. And of course, Biden isn't doing anything about the border. He's pretending, you know, that it doesn't exist, or he's kind of saying something or implying that maybe he'll do something about it. This is just a disaster. You know, and I mean, of course, I think it is all sort of planned. I mean, I don't think it's been an accident. They, you know, just like anybody can tell that Biden has dementia, anybody can tell that letting letting anybody come across the border. I mean, letting masses come across the border, not having any control over that, including terrorists who are coming over the border, terrorists on the terrorist watch list. You know, it's just pandemonium.
Absolutely. Now, I guess this will be the last question, and we've covered a lot of ground, which I'm grateful for, Dr. Carroll. E. Jean Carroll, this woman who made some claims that didn't add up. She got the year wrong. She got the details wrong, but she got this massive award in the so-called rape civil trial. What's your take? Can we believe all women?
No, I don't think you can believe all women just because they're a woman. That trial was absurd. Yes, you know, like somebody would rape somebody. Well, they didn't find that he had raped her, but in fact, they gave most of the award because he was saying bad things about her. Well, you know, what do you say when someone is making these lies about you, taking you to court, all of this? It's just crazy. This is not the kind of thing that would have happened in a department store like that, with nobody hearing it. You know, if you're getting raped and you don't shout and nobody would have heard, I mean, it's a very quiet, sedate store. I've been there many times. I'm originally from New York, and it's just not an impossible story. But what it shows is that the jury in New York, because there are so many people in New York, and it's a Democrat state, and because there are so many people who don't like Trump, they really just glossed over what she was saying and the validity of it. And they just, you know, found him guilty because he was Trump.
And this is the scariest thing, isn't it, that you can live in a system in the United States, land that's the free, home of the brave, but you can still use your bias to go after your political opponents, even if you don't really follow politics. This is the great misunderstanding, I think, for many of us that we are so easily led in a situation of a two-party political system. It's a tragedy that what we're seeing in the United States, but we look forward to November with all the hope in the world that we will see a change of the man in the Oval Office. Please God, something happens. Dr. Carol Lieberman, thank you for your time and expertise today. Greatly appreciated.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. And coming up after the break, filmmaker and journalist Nicole McCaw will be here. She made the film Border Wars. Don't go anywhere. You're watching and listening to Weekends with Jason Olborn here on TNT Radio.